Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, January 8th. We're back with you.
Yeah, with me.
Yes, with you.
With May.
Jen is here.
I'm here. I'm a little delirious, but I'm here.
Yeah, right? Crazy morning for you.
Crazy morning, crazy night. We didn't wrap until almost midnight last night.
Really? So yeah. Again, you didn't get too much sleep.
No, but I got to be... Like, it was weird going, putting my producer hat, because they made me associate producer. It was weird going from putting my producing hat on to, they had me be an extra in this one scene. So we had to get all, like, glammed up, and I had, like, glitter on my eyes and, like, a full, like, gown on. It was it was a lot of fun, but I was also standing there with the extras, like, there's so much to do back there that I need to do right now. Yeah. I gotta go.
Amazing.
But, yeah, it was good. It was a good night.
Good.
It was
good
long
for you.
Though, yeah.
As long as you're doing something you love, you know, that's what's important.
Totally.
Welcome and thank you for joining us this morning. If you want to see us on Facebook, we do have a guest today. And you can go to LA Talk Radio's page on Facebook and you can see us there. A couple of things. I was struck by this news today. A young girl was hit by a foul ball at the Astros game, I guess. And that was several months ago. So a baseball hit this two-year-old girl.
Oh, my God.
In the head. So apparently she's got, like, permanent brain surgery. And my question is, why did her parents have her sitting there? They were at the field level, you know? And why do you take a two-year-old to a baseball game anyway, you know?
Guess you don't have a babysitter.
Yeah, you know, you don't expect the ball to hit her, but at the same time, you know, it's not exactly a place.
Yeah, it's rowdy and people are drunk and acting crazy. I mean, I'm from Philly, so people get really crazy. The sports fans are.
Yeah. But I mean, I can imagine a ball like this, and those balls are hard.
Yeah. You know, those balls are hard.
So we're not talking about testicles, folks.
No, not at all. We're talking about baseball.
Yeah. It's funny. This reminds me on Facebook yesterday. They showed, like, people trying to make cookies that are heart-shaped.
Oh,
did
no,
you see that one?
No.
But then when it melts, it looks like testicles. So that was funny, you know.
Sam and I are really good at ruining, like, serious news.
Yeah, there you go, you know. But, you know, I was also thinking of all the pain in Australia, you know, all the animals, you know.
I know.
And, I mean, a billion animals can even begin to, you know, I thought if we could hear the cry of each one of them when they died, can you imagine how loud it would be, you know?
Imagine how many vegetarians we'd have if people heard that on farms.
That's true, right? You would be happy.
That happens every day, all day.
But there again, we ruined serious news.
Yeah.
So, well, we better get to our guest then.
Yeah,
right? Or we're going to get ourselves in deep shit.
Welcome.
We're joined by Casey Lansdale. Welcome to the show, Casey.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And she's back, actually. She was on the show about over a year ago. So you were here with your dad.
I was here with my dad. We had a new book that came out.
And
today I'm here for some new music that's coming out.
Right.
Amazing.
And you guys wrote, like, what, a horror book, right?
So my father's an author, and he's published about 50 novels, but he and I did a collection together of different short stories and put them all in one book. And it was a supernatural horror series. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I love that.
So did you write them, like, separately, each story separately, or did you write them all together?
Both. So some we did separate, and then some we did together, and then we collected them all in the one book.
And what's the book called, if people want to read
Terror Is Our Business.
Terror Is Our Business.
That's right.
Okay.
I like that.
Terror's our business, as we say into terror.
Yeah. That's right. Are you from Texas?
I'm
You're from Texas,
Texas,
right? That's what I remember.
Yeah, I live here in L.A., but I'm definitely from Texas. And I was just home for holidays, so I'm like full Texas right now. I still like the accent is super strong because it was nothing but family and friends.
Oh, yeah. I know.
And if I remember, it was an interesting name of the town you came from.
That's right.
What's it called?
Nacogdoches.
Nacogdoches.
It's the oldest town in Texas.
Really?
Wow.
That's what they tell us.
Wow.
It's on the t-shirt.
Yeah, but.
That means it's true.
It's official, right?
Yeah. Totally.
Wow. So how's your dad doing, by the way?
He's good.
Yeah?
He
still lives back in Texas?
He's still back in Texas. When I was home, we just did normal, quote unquote, normal family stuff and had a big time. And he's got some new projects out. He's got some stuff that's about to be filmed and, you know, just trudging away as he does.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Can you imagine working with your dad? It's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
totally.
That would be pretty cool.
I just used to get into fights with my dad when he'd help me with math homework. Be like, I don't get it.
Well, we have our moments, but I would say mostly we work really well together.
That's great.
Our sensibilities are similar. Our cadence is similar. Our vernacular, you know, it really blends well. And then when it doesn't, it's very clear.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we kind of sort that out and then get back to it. But it's been really nice to be able to do several different collaborations with him. We've done not only that collection, we've done several short stories together, and we're actually working on a novel right now with those same two characters from Terror.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
So you're working together on a novel now.
Yeah. So we'll see how that... It's hard because obviously the distance and we both have other projects going on. So, you know, because I'm mainly a full-time musician. So the writing, I write songs and that's a passion for me. But the fiction writing is something that I quote unquote do on the side. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he has his own things that, you know, he's contracted with the publishers to finish. So he's got his stuff. So we kind of have to weave in between when we're not doing anything.
Right.
And our intention was to make a lot of progress over the holidays, which we did not.
Yeah.
We ended up actually spending holiday, which was great.
Exactly. No, you don't want to work on a holiday, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any siblings?
I have a brother who's also a writer. He writes comic books and screenplays.
Really?
Oh, fun.
So he's had a couple...
Family of creatives.
Yeah, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
He just had something filmed called The Pale Door. And that was something they just shot. That
sounds also like a horror film or something.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's more of a Western. I actually didn't read... You know, that was kind of his baby, so I didn't dive too deep into it. But I think it was a Western.
Oh, okay.
If I had to guess, maybe with supernatural or horrific elements, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I've been wrong before.
Yeah. Sorry. So how did you get into that genre? Was that because your dad was writing about it before?
Yeah, you know, it started because people would ask me, like, what was it like growing up, you know, at a Lansdale? And I thought, well, you know, I didn't think much about it. I just did my thing, went to school, came home. And then you started to realize that everybody else's parents went to work all day, and my parents both worked from home.
Oh.
So my mother's an editor, and she would do the bookkeeping and keep everything in line there. And then my father, of course, wrote from home. And so people would start by asking me to contribute to nonfiction articles.
Sure.
Like, what was it like? And then when I started talking about it, then people would say, well, what about writing a story for this and writing a story for that? And then I would do that. And then as I did it more and more, I became a little more crafted. And then people would start buying it for other collections. And some mostly with my father in collaboration. And now it's gotten to the point where people are starting to ask me for work without my father's collaboration. So, you know, it's little baby steps.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just a piece of the puzzle. But it's funny because when people ask me what I do, my immediate response is I'm a musician, I'm a singer, because that's my heart and where I've always kind of started. But now it's sort of evolved, and moving to L.A. really opened up a lot of doors for not only the music and the writing, but now I do things that I never thought I would do, like audiobooks.
Really?
You know, or commercials or things that just weren't an option when I lived in Nashville or when I lived in Texas.
Sure.
Right.
So, you know, it's just, as with everyone, it's like a new stage comes in your life and you just kind of navigate it. And luckily, it's been able to kind of orbit around the things that I already love, because reading audiobooks, for example, it's great. I get to read a book. I get to show up in my pajamas. You know, these are all things I love. And I get to now use what comes to me naturally, because it's usually Southern-based work that they need, or Cajun, or, you know, somewhere in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. So I get to just kind of emphasize what is already natural for me.
Right.
Very cool.
Very nice.
So when you read audiobooks, do they give it to you beforehand and you kind of study them? How does that work, or how is that?
It's a very good question, because it's both. It's all of it. So sometimes if I get it, I'll study it, in the sense of I'll read through it once, just because sometimes you want to be sure that there's not a word or a name that you're not familiar with.
Sure.
Because there will be things, like I read one that the name was Raylin, and I kept wanting to say Raylin. So I had, is it Raylin or is it Raylin? You know, and you kind of have to sort that stuff out because you don't want to read 5 hours worth of work and turns out you said the name wrong.
Totally.
And, you know, at the end of the day, it is your interpretation, but also why not kind of ask the author when you have access to that?
Of course.
So sometimes I'll read through it. I don't like to study too hard because I think having a cold reading kind of lets the listener have the surprise along with me.
Right.
Because if you have read it and the excitement of those pivotal moments has already happened, it's then you're really having to act it out a little bit more instead of experiencing it with the listener, I guess, at that point.
That's what we do on the show. We try not to ask the guest too many questions before, because once you know the answer, it's like it's boring.
Exactly.
You know?
Totally.
So you moved to Nashville before you moved to L.A. from Texas?
I went... I guess for about 6 years, I was sort of back and forth between Texas and Nashville. Mm-hmm. I recorded a lot in Nashville. I still have a lot of ties and connections there.
So that was for the music?
That was for the music, right. So there's a
place. Was that like country music?
Yeah, it's country music. And that's kind of my thing, is kind of country blues.
Okay.
And
So Nashville is definitely the place to be.
Yeah, it is, but it's not for me.
Right.
Because it is the mecca of country music, there's no doubt, but... I was putting my fingers in doing music for film and television, so I was flying out to L.A. all the time.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I thought, well, hell, if I'm going to do that, I may as well just stay and, you know.
And here you are.
And here I am.
So how long have you been in L.A. now?
The 20th, so pretty quick, will be 4 years.
Oh, really?
Amazing.
Oh, wow. So this is home for you now.
It is home, yeah. You know, there's a lot of changes and a lot of things that take getting used to, and then there's a lot of things that feel like it's always been that way. It's just, it sort of took that adjustment, because even though it's just Texas to California, it's a big difference.
It is,
you know, Texas to Tennessee wasn't that different.
Yeah.
Sure.
But Texas to California, you're just like, whoa, there's a lot of things. And it's also, well, and it's obviously, you know, the political climate, the sort of cultural idea of a lot of things are very different. But for me, that sort of suited, because I was always sort of the odd man out where I am, and my family was sort of the odd man out. And it was okay, and I never really felt as odd man out as I was until I left and realized how odd man out I was, if that makes any sense.
Totally.
Because, you know, you see what you see on the news, but what I was surrounded by were very nice, hardworking, honest, sincere people who were my friends, you know. And then I come here and I sort of go like, oh, so I have all that too, but now we're all a little bit more on the same page where we land with what's going on in the climate and what's going on with the world. And
you found your people.
Yeah, and it's just exactly finding the tribe. And like you guys were talking about with the Australia, you know, I mean, it's like you watch that and you can't, well, I can't fight that's a lot of things that we could do to fix that, prevent that, to save that going in other places. And you just think, okay, well, how can we have that conversation? And it feels like it's easier to have that conversation here.
Yeah.
And people are more open to that conversation.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I don't know. I often wonder what it'd be like to move from California to Texas, because apparently a lot of people are doing just that.
I think you'd love it. I really, yeah. I mean, you know, I love Texas, and I love the people there, and the food is, you know, get ready to put on some LBs because some good food. But, you know, I think you would love it. It's more affordable. It's, people are very nice. It's,
right.
It has all the same things in terms of geographical locations. We have the mountains, we have the desert, we have the trees, we have the ocean. So it's in a very weird way, it's very similar. So it would be exactly the same sort of feeling I went through. It's like, oh, this is home, and there's a lot of things similar and different. But have you been? Have you ever visited?
No, I've never been to Texas.
Well, you should go.
Did you ever live in a big city there? Or just in
I didn't. You know, I visited all the time to places like Houston, Austin, Dallas.
Okay.
But I'm from East Texas, so okay. It's very wooded. It's sort of what people think of Louisiana is more, because I'm 40 miles from the Louisiana border.
Right.
So it's trees, it's swampy, and it's behind the Pine Curtain.
It's not the desert and all that stuff.
No. And actually, when I moved out here and I drove across West Texas, I thought if we just set that left half on fire, no one would know the difference. Because there's nothing there, except for tarantulas. And sorry, but like... I'm okay with it. Doesn't matter.
Oh well, you know.
It was a rough. I mean, it took 2 days. My father moved out with me here, and we took the road trip and just made it a thing. But 2 days to get across Texas.
Really?
Yeah. And then the rest of it was easy. But
I think it's a wide state.
Ooh, mercy. Well, when you get to one place in the middle of the state and it's like El Paso, 890 miles, you're like, what have I done?
Yeah.
Like, what choice did I make in life to put me here? 890 miles or what? I don't remember what it is specifically, but it's 800 and something miles to El Paso. And you just go like, ugh.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
It's rough.
So that's huge. A big one.
But it'd be like if you said, I'm going to drive from low California all the way to the top.
That's true.
But why would you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, why would you do that? I don't even know that we have 900 miles. Probably. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
I would say.
It's not easy.
No. But road trips are fun. You know, I want to make another road trip soon. I haven't decided where yet, but you got to go there and then start the road trip there, because just driving from here to somewhere else takes a long time, you know?
Yeah.
So you spend like 3 days, let's say if I want to go to Oregon again or something, right?
Right.
Takes you 2 days just to get there and then 2 days back. And so you have no time left, you know.
Totally.
So that's why I flew there to Portland and then took a road trip there for a week, and that was excellent.
Well, and that's the way, especially if you're staying on the West Coast, you can get flights so affordable. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I typically, when I do that sort of thing, I just fly Southwest.
Yeah.
And they offer, you know, like $100 round trip, and you just, why not have that experience?
Exactly, you know, yeah.
It's too easy and too beautiful not to.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So you drove all the way from Texas to here, though.
We did, but after we got out of Texas, we went up to the Grand Canyon and
yeah,
saw well, that.
You enjoy it. I mean, you don't want to just go straight, right?
I think we took. I don't know if I'm exaggerating this or not, but I feel like we took a 2 week trip.
Yeah,
it might have been a week and a half, but we stayed several nights in Santa Fe. We stayed several nights in. The Grand Canyon area,
so you weren't in a hurry.
Yeah, and it was kind of a father-daughter bonding thing.
Yeah.
My cousin actually was supposed to drive out with me, and then we had some family illnesses that, you know, wrecked everything. But luckily that
was supposed to be that.
Yeah, way. And it turned out to be great. It was nice to kind of have that memory, you know.
Yeah. It's like, what about you when you moved? Did you drive too?
No, I was going to drive, but I didn't get a car until I got out here.
Right, that's right.
But that would have been a heck of a trip. I mean, I'm talking about going across Texas. You're talking about the nation.
I know. I've done it before.
I think it would be fun if you took your time.
Yeah, it's fun. When I did it, I came with this friend that I had, and we were like kind of at the end of our friendship, and so we went with her sister and her sister's husband, and the whole time everyone in the car was sick except me, and everyone was chain smoking cigarettes with the heat blasting and the windows locked.
Oh my god.
I know. And I was just like in the back seat like, can somebody please open the window?
Why is everyone sick? I don't understand.
I know.
Yeah, right?
And
I got sick. Yeah, of course I got sick. But it was a really, really awesome trip besides all that.
Yeah.
I actually had this really weird situation that happened when we got to San Francisco. I had this friend that I met who I had met years ago when I lived in Florida. And, excuse me, I hadn't been in contact with him. And he was in San Francisco. And this was like kind of before, this was like just when like cell phones were getting really smart.
Right.
And, so like we couldn't like share location and things like that. So I was like, hey, I'm at this cafe. Let's meet up, because he was in town at the same time. He was like, okay, great. And then he went to the one on the opposite side of town, which was like 45 minutes away. Both of our phones died. Now I'm like maybe 15 miles from where I was. And we stop into this pizza shop, and I just get this feeling to go outside. So I go outside and I look across the street, and he's walking across the street. I see him between two cars, and I was just like, Kevin? And he was like, what the hell? So yeah, it was kind of like a magical trip for me. It was my first time in LA, and it just.
So you moved before you'd even been here?
No, this was years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So this, I didn't road trip out here. I flew out here when I moved, but this was maybe like 10 years ago so. It was my first time here, and I was just kind of like, I love it here. Yeah. I want to go back. Yeah, 10 years later, here I am. It took long enough.
Right.
But yeah, I love a road trip, just like packing the car with snacks and good music, get a playlist. Yeah.
Have you ever noticed that, like, you don't eat that much in a day, but as soon as you get in the car, you blow through all your snacks.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know what that's about. As soon as I get in the car, I'm like, I need a snack.
Yeah.
I know. Like, I know. Just keep your eyes open.
It's 7:15 in the morning. You just had breakfast. Yes, but I need a snack.
You're like, I need Cheetos right now. Yeah, well, totally.
So let's get a little bit to the music and stuff. You do you play an instrument?
I play a guitar and piano enough for writing, but when I perform live, I let people who are really good at that do that.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But
fair
did
enough.
You use those instruments to sing with and stuff when you were younger?
Yeah, you know, I would, let's say, accompany myself on the guitar. You know, it was always just sort of like strum a chord and feel it and hear it and then strum another chord. You know, I wasn't doing finger picking. I wasn't doing anything fancy. It was just to carry the voice.
Right, right.
It was right at the cusp. When I grew up listening to country music, it was the Wynonna Judd. It was Reba McEntire, Martina McBride, Trisha Yearwood. All of these people, Faith Hill, they were all vocalists. Mm. I think you might now see Wynonna step on with a guitar now and then. Yeah. But really, none of these female singers played instruments. They stood in front of the microphone and they wailed.
Right.
And I mean that with, you know, nothing but good thoughts and feelings about it. So I never really thought like, oh, I need to really focus on the instrument. And I did just enough so where I could write songs and then I could pick it out to somebody and say, okay, here's what we're going for.
Right.
Now, if you could go in there and do it on the beat, that'd be great.
Right, yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think a guitar mostly is to accompany singing, you know? And I know I picked it up pretty early on in my life because I love to sing. And I saw somebody play the guitar and sing. I'm like, wow, this is perfect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I focused more on chords and stuff too, you know, rather than, you know, solos and all that. But yeah, I can totally understand that. So you write your own music. You started writing your own songs?
Write my own songs. Sometimes, well, for example, like the new single, Good Girl, that is one that I co-wrote with. So it started out with a friend of mine. A lot of songs I write alone. A lot of songs I co-write with. Sometimes if you are under a publishing deal, they put you in touch with their other writers, and you're sort of, for lack of a nicer word, you're forced to write with their people, and it's not a hardship. That's just you sort of stay under the umbrella of who you're working for.
Sure.
In this instance with Good Girl, a friend of mine who's a Grammy writer, she had a song that she'd written back in the 90s and when she lived in Nashville, and it was Good Girl. And she sent it to me, and the hook was great, and the rest of it was a little dated. It sort of sounded like a Carpenter tune, and which at that time would have been, you know, the thing. But I knew there was something special in there, and so I took it with a friend of mine, Lucas Bacher, who actually lives here in Sherman Oaks. And we took it from that sort of da-da-da-da, sound and made it, we swampified it. We made it a little grittier, and we brought it up to what sort of reflects that bluesy country sound that I have, and it turned into Good Girl. And we sort of, excuse me, we sort of tweaked some of the lyrics. We definitely tweaked the instrumentation. And then when I took it to my producer, he took it up another level and sort of said, okay, you've got this. My co-writer and I, we put sort of a Tejano feel on it. Mm. And then the producer took that and then made it even grittier, and, you know, by bringing in the right instrumentation, by bringing in the right players. And it was really, this is probably the most collaborative thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Which is why it was exciting, because you kind of get in your own rhythm when you write by yourself, and you go to the same, you have the toolbox and you use the same tools.
Sure.
So to have so many people be involved in this, at first I thought, well, this is going to be my nightmare. Just because, you know, a lot of cooks. But it turned out that everybody was a really good cook, and we ended up with what I think is a feast, if you will.
Wow.
I love that.
And that's cool. And this song is going to be released this Friday, right?
Right. So Thursday, t- What is today? Wednesday. So technically, Wednesday. Tomorrow is the premiere of the song itself on Stage Right Secrets. Woo! And they're playing the music. And then Friday, Billboard is premiering the music video.
Oh, nice.
So I'm, yeah, so I'm really excited about it. And we actually released an acoustic version of this song to Country Rebel, and they had... In 48 hours, they had over 40,000 views.
Wow.
So that was exciting. And I think you actually have that.
Yeah, we have that queued up. And I want to hear it because, I mean, that's a lot of people to listen, you know.
It was great.
And so this is the acoustic version of this one we can listen to, right?
Right. So the official one will come out tomorrow. And I'll be posting about that on all my socials. And that's, you know, Casey Lansdale on everything. But we can listen to the acoustic version because it already came out. And I have playing with me here Vince White,
right,
who is on harmonica and guitar. And he's actually a local L.A. a musician as well.
Uh-huh.
He and I have, along with a guy named Brian Villioni, we have a residency every Sunday at the Grove. So if they enjoy this, they can come see actually me with Vince in addition to Brian every Sunday at the Grove.
Really? Every Sunday? That's pretty cool, huh?
There's a place there called Mixology 101, and we're there 3 to 6 at the Mix. That's how I remember.
Oh, wow.
Check
all
it
right,
out.
All right, well, let's listen to Casey, Good Girl, the acoustic version.
Hey, y'all. My name is Casey Lansdale, and right now I'm in Los Angeles, California, in my own backyard. And I want to sing my new single for you, Good Girl.
There you go. You guys can see this on YouTube, too.
I remember as a young girl, my mama said to me, bad boys are a good time, but eventually they'll leave. Find yourself a good boy, one who won't break your heart. 'Cause if you love a bad boy, first a good girl loves a bad boy, and the bad boy makes her cry. And then the good girl becomes a bad girl, 'cause she's learned how to lie. Then the bad girl finds a good boy, and leaves him brokenhearted. And that's how the good girl, bad girl, good boy thing gets started. In this life, there's a lot of lessons you will learn. Sometimes it's the hard way, and sometimes you get burned. Every time you break a heart, you're making a heartbreaker. Another love goes up in flames, here comes the undertaker. First the good girl loves the bad boy, and the bad boy makes her cry. And then the good girl becomes a bad girl, 'cause she's learned how to lie. Then the bad girl finds a good boy and leaves him brokenhearted. And that's how the good girl, bad girl, good boy thing gets started.
Cool, I like the beat, you know? Really upbeat song.
First a good girl loves a bad boy, and the bad boy makes her cry. And then the good girl becomes a bad girl, 'cause she's learned how to lie. Then the bad girl finds a good boy and leaves him brokenhearted. And that's how the good girl, bad girl, good boy thing gets started. First a good girl loves a bad boy, and the bad boy makes her cry. And then the good girl becomes a bad girl, 'cause she's learned how to lie. Then the bad girl finds a good boy and leaves him brokenhearted. And that's how the good girl, bad girl, good boy thing gets started. Oh yeah. Oh, I'm a bad girl.
So you start off as a good girl, now you're a bad girl.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta look out to who you hang out with, you know?
I'm a bad girl.
There it is. Right. I took my headphones off so I wouldn't hear it, and I'm like, well, that didn't help at all because I still hear it. Because like just hearing yourself blasting in the headphones, it's like, oh my god,
really?
I hate it. Hate it. Wow.
And I was wondering why you took it off, but
I knew. It was like, oh, there it is. Because you know, that's me standing on the back porch. You know, so it's like I hear every. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of that is you hear every raw piece, which is nice. But then at the same time, you hear every raw piece and you're like, I don't know that I need it that loud in my ears.
Right.
But yeah, I'm really proud of that. And it was just, it was so great to have Judy, the original good girl person, send it to me because it had just been sitting in a drawer. And she's like, I think there's something here. I think you could do something with it. And it was the first time that I had taken someone else's song and done something with it. So I was really happy with it, and I cannot wait to actually share the full song that comes out tomorrow.
Yeah.
And the video we shot in Joshua Tree. We shot it with the same people who did my last video for Sorry Ain't Enough, which is the last single.
I can totally see Joshua Tree where the video is for this.
You know, it's fun. It's like it's just one of those things where I wanted to capture the California feel. So I went back. Most of my recordings have been done in Nashville at the Cash Cabin. And that is sort of where I think of as my place that I do music. But for this song, because of how it evolved, I wanted to bring it back home and kind of have a homecoming feeling, a homecoming sound, that swampy thing I talked about. But at the same time, Texas is not home anymore. So I wanted to find a way to incorporate what is my new home. And that was doing the visual piece. So having the visual piece with the audio, and then that was sort of how, you know, the Good Girl video was formed. And Philip Guzman is the director of it. And he had done the last video in Nashville for Sorry Ain't Enough. And when I called him and I was like, hey, are you available? He was like, let's do it. And I thought, all right, here we go.
Love it. Yeah.
Very nice. So so when she sent you the song, was it the lyrics and the music already?
It was. And it was... It was very different, but the hook was the same. And that was the piece. That's how the good... But it was sounded as... that and the good girl and the bad girl and the da-da-da. I can't remember how it was, but it was... You could still hear each piece, and it was beautifully written. And probably had it been heard at the right time, it would have been a song that people would have enjoyed then. But being able to kind of take her idea and then flesh it out for today's audience. I was just, it was an experiment that I enjoyed that I didn't think I would enjoy.
Wow, yeah. That's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, and she was great. She was like, it's yours, do your thing.
Nice.
So, and that never happens either, you know. It's
never.
Here, I made my baby, and then like, feel free to dress it how you want, you know.
Right. Yeah, totally. No, it's great,
so
I love it.
Is she happy with the results?
I think so, I hope so. If not, she hasn't mentioned. So.
Really?
Fingers crossed, right?
I know. I guess we'll hear tomorrow.
Very nice. So this is going to be released where again tomorrow?
So tomorrow it's on Stage Right Secrets.
And what's that?
So that's a country music platform. They've got all their social media. I assume they'll release it on Facebook and Instagram, et cetera. You know, everything's done online nowadays.
Right.
I mean, even the radio station that we're on, you know, it's an online radio we're sharing on Facebook Live. It's sort of more often than not, everything is going to have an online release. And then Stage Right Secrets will do the premiere tomorrow. Friday will be the Billboard online premiere. And as far as I understand, they'll share the link. I'll share the link, and then it'll be out there, and then it'll likely end up on some platform that's a YouTube or YouTube equivalent. When I did my last video, it came out on Zeus and GAC, and those outlets existed then. And now the number, and that was, God, 5 years ago, so it wasn't that long ago, but it was long enough that the whole landscape for how video releases happen now have changed.
It changed that much, huh?
Yeah, so when it was time to put this video out and I was kind of reaching out to people I had worked with in the past, most of them said, yeah, I'm not with that company anymore. It doesn't exist. Everybody has sort of, you know, whatever the word equivalent of that sound is, has absorbed into one another.
Right.
And there's only a few places now to go.
Right.
And, you know, just it's the nature of it.
Yeah, yeah. So you end up on Spotify and iTunes.
All the, you know, the Pandoras. I mean, everywhere where you can get music, this song should be available tomorrow.
Right.
We'll see if we did the paperwork right.
Right.
It's great. There's more platforms now too.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's a blessing and a curse because it's like there are more ways to be found, and you kind of have to hope that it doesn't get lost in that noise.
Right.
And it's just like there's streaming platforms for TV shows. Now there's so many more platforms to have television shows come out. But now are we inundated with too many shows and platforms?
Yeah. Right.
And you could have an argument for either side, but all you can do is keep creating content that you believe in and hope that people believe in it too and it rises up. And
right.
Having people like you guys who are like, sure, come on in, talk about it. And like, yeah, that matters, you know?
Right, of course. But the problem is today with music is that it's hard to make money, right?
Correct.
So you work hard at edit and everything. And
well, used to, you got your everything except for the record deal got a piece of your record sales.
Right.
Now record deals are, for the most part, 360 deals, which means they get a piece of your touring, they get a piece of your merch, they get a piece of your appearances. If you're somebody and you go on and you're a CoverGirl model, even though that has nothing to do with music, if you're connected under their contract, they get a piece of that.
Wow.
You know, so they get a piece of everything that you make money on now because the record sales are not making enough.
Right. Mm.
And I think Rihanna, I can't remember the numbers because I've slept since then, but her last like gold or platinum album was something like 200,000. And you think like 200,000 15 years ago wouldn't have been that. You know, so I mean, it's like it changes and it's all perspective. And now, ever since, you know, the days of Napster, I mean, not to be 100 years old, but ever since Napster, the mentality became that music is free.
It's free, right. All content is free.
All content is free. Right. You don't have to pay. And there are people that truly don't understand that it's stealing.
Right.
And especially the people that came right after me. To them, it's always been free.
Right.
To me, I've been on both. I was there right as it was starting to be stolen. And then when you had to pay for it, and now it's sort of made a full circle back to where it's the, instead of releasing a full album, you release a single.
Right, yeah.
Sheryl Crow just put out a big interview, and she said she won't be doing full-length albums anymore because in this landscape it doesn't make sense.
Right.
So you look at it, you go like, Sheryl Crow can't sell a CD.
Right.
So, you know, what do we do with that?
Right. So then you go on the streaming services and you get pennies for your for your songs.
Right. Yeah, and literally, subscriptions
point
and stuff
0.0005, you know. And you go like, oh, well, that's good that it cost amount of dollars to put it. Because people forget it's not just writing the song. It's going in the studio. Somebody's paying for it, whether it's you, whether it's a label, whether it's an investor. Somebody's paying for it. So the studio time, the musicians, the studio it, you know, itself,
like the mixer.
The engineer. Then so that's just putting the music together.
Right. What about the talent
mastering
and the
it?
Writing and all that stuff?
And then you got to do the photo shoot for, you know, the visuals. And then you got to do the music video. Then you got, you know, there's so much to putting out one song that let's just say you don't do it because you want to be a millionaire. You do it because you love it, you know. But the beauty is that because of the landscape changing, people are finding new ways. And that's why I started doing film and television music. Mm. Because there's still a market for that. You can do the music you love. People love discovering a song they haven't heard for that. Mm. And that's sort of the goal with music being placed in film and television versus the other mentality, which is, well, if I haven't heard it on top 40, it's not good.
Right.
Sure.
You know, when I tour Europe and I go to Italy and I go to these places, you can see the way the audience responds there versus here. They don't care if they've heard it on the top 40 countdown. It doesn't matter. That's not their mentality. Their mentality is to discover.
I see.
Our mentality, as for the most part, is to be fed what is good.
Right.
And that's, it's not judgment. It just is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you ask somebody, what are they listening to? It's probably going to be a top 40 unless they're an aficionado and they do a deep dive.
Right.
But most people, that's not their passion. Most people just want something they can bop along
that's
to.
True.
And that's fine.
And maybe that's a remnant of radio using, well, I don't know how it is today because I don't really listen to radio, but they used to play the same songs over and over and over.
Oh my gosh. When Adele first came out, it's like you turn your car on and she's on, and then you turn your car off and you go into a store and there she is, and you go into like the hallway of the store and there she is. It was just like Adele.
You're right. They were feeding it to us. You know?
Well, it's just like emails. You know, they say you get seven emails from a company. before you click it open. Mm-hmm. And then you become invested. So you had to receive and delete 7 emails before you go like, fine, I'll see what this company's about that has been sending me this email.
Right.
And it's the same thing with music. You have to hear it X amount of times. And then, and I hate to say this, but it's a lot of what's going on in our political climate too. It's like the more that someone repeats something, the more it must be true.
Right.
And that's why things like social media has become a difficulty, because people keep saying something and then people just go like, oh, that must be true because I've seen this before.
Sure.
And, you know, it's just, it's the nature of what is going on in the world right now, what's going on with, you know, just everything, music, radio, film. And it's just, it's like the, even television, you know, the more that you see an ad for, we were talking a little bit about Schitt's Creek before we started, you know, and that's been on for at least 5 seasons. I can't remember. I watched it, loved it. But you saw it today, and that was the first you'd seen it.
Right.
So now you can go back and binge it, and that's sort of how the mentality is. It's like if we just keep putting it out there and we keep sharing it, people will go to it. If we keep sending that email, eventually they'll open it.
Right. I mean, look at Game of Thrones. Like when Game of Thrones is on, it's all anyone can talk about.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I mean, I've seen it. I think it's fine. I've seen like maybe an episode, but people have like parties. They have Game of Thrones parties on Sundays or whatever night that it's on to watch it.
Right.
And that's so crazy that it's like a cult.
Yeah.
It's a Game of Thrones cult. But no, you're so right about how we're fed things, and it's really about discovering, like, you know, you show somebody an artist that they've never seen before and they're like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then suddenly you're like, you hear them on the radio, or they hear them on the radio, and they're like, oh my God, this is great. You're like, I literally played that for you like 3 months ago.
Right.
You know, like people don't want to, they don't want to believe it unless everyone's saying it.
Well, and because now, and you know, these don't necessarily have to be negative things, but now the response for so many people is, well, were you on American Idol? Were you on The Voice? And it's like, well, if you know, and it kills me because we all live here. We know how it works. You know, like most of those people have had a record deal that's been lost. Most of those people are somehow connected to the production. It's it's very rare that they actually went out and found somebody that's on the street corner undiscovered and they plucked them from obscurity into stardom overnight. Yeah. And people,
like all those people in New York City playing in the subway, and some of them are incredible.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
And it's just, you know, people don't understand that. People have publicists, for example, that send a package and they go through. I mean, I've had it happen to me for different television shows. There's a reality show I'm on that comes out this year, and a lot of it came from somebody knew somebody that had somebody, you know, and it doesn't mean I didn't work hard to get there, and it doesn't mean I didn't do all the things, but it means someone put me in front of the right person at the right time, and I already had a background of things that they could pull from.
Right.
So it's very rare they're going to take somebody who's brand new, who has no repertoire, who has no fan base, who has, it doesn't have to be huge all the time, but very rarely are you going to find the 12-year-old that has never done anything and bring them out. Right. Most of the time that 12-year-old, for example, has grown a social media following. And great, they worked hard, I'm sure, to do that. But it's never just like, oh, there's this one person and they've done nothing. Right. It's always a collaboration of so many things.
And there's so much competition that it's not feasible to do that, you know? So people have to work hard to stand out and make people really hear about them and know about them.
Well, and there's always been competition, but it seems like there were more gatekeepers for that. Now, whether that's good or bad, it depends on who you ask, you know? But I mean, like in the world of publishing, used to, if you picked up a book, you know, it probably went through several editors. You know, it's probably had a lot of proofreaders. You know, it went through a lot of channels to get to where it was. Now you can go to a major bookstore and pick up a book, and it may be fantastic, but it also might be self-published and nobody bothered to correct the spelling.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just, and you just never know what you're going to get.
Right.
And if you have this much time in the day because you just worked an 8-hour shift and you don't want to sit there and discover all these things, then you understand why people go like, oh, well, this is what I'm being fed. This is what people are having parties about at their house. So I'm going to just take that. Right. Because we already know this has been vetted. So you understand the mentality, but as the artist, it's frustrating because you just feel like, well, who is the gatekeeper? And then why are those people the gate? You know, I mean, you could play this game all day. And you, at the end of the day, you just go like, hey, I just got to keep doing what feels good for me and creating something that I believe in.
Right.
That's the only thing that's going to make you feel like anything you're doing is worthwhile anyway.
Right. And that's what we all do. It's like, I mean, you guys wouldn't do this if you didn't think there was some positive outcome for this, if this didn't bring you joy in some way.
It's got to scratch an itch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Before we go, I want to hear a little bit of Sorry Ain't Enough. That was your song before Good Girl?
I've had a lot of releases since then, but that was the last major release.
Okay. So let's hear a little bit of that. Curious. This one is all produced and everything.
Well, looky here, what the cat drug in. I heard you might have lost your new girlfriend. Then knock, knock, knock. Guess who's at my door? Now you're talking like you've lost your mind. Standing here handing me the same old lines. How you wanna go back to what we had?
I like
before.
This, you see, I mean, this would totally be like a Country Music Awards or anything.
It's a jam for sure. I see like big lights behind you. You know?
Do you do the background vocals here too?
No, this I think was Etta Britt.
What's that?
Etta Britt, I think, was the background on this.
Oh. Cool video, too.
Are those flowers really meant for me? You brought a teddy bear, I guess you think that's sweet. Tell me, boy, how dumb do you think I am? Does this look like a swinging door? Your little key don't fit no more. I think it's time you find a better plan. Start by telling me how much it hurts to not have me.
You see, this one was posted in 2014, right?
Yeah, so it's been a while since that came. I guess now 2020.
Pretty cool.
So I had another release out in between that called Leave Her Wild. And it had five songs on it. And I think it was three out of five of them got film placements. And that was sort of how that one ended up moving forward. So each one, you know, this one was a radio tour, a video release. I toured across 28 states and, you know, just played the mess out of that song. So it was fun to go from that to the next one being mainly a film and television cut. And this next one, hopefully I can combo the two.
Do you like touring?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
You know,
I had a feeling that was the answer.
I love performing and I love meeting people and I love traveling. I also love having my routine. I love being in my home. I love my familiar surroundings because I'm a creature of habit. So it's hard, you know, and the more you travel and you get tired and it's easy to wear yourself down and get sick. And the first thing to go is always the voice. And, you know, so it's very stressful physically.
Mm. I imagine the first few tours are probably more like you're more, okay, cool, right. we're on it, you know, your steam
correct.
Hasn't let out.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. And, you know, the older you get, the more you just kind of want to have your comforts and the things that are around you that you're used to, you know, but that's really not the nature of the business. So that's why doing the music and film and television is really the for me, the mecca, because you get to create, you get to do what you love, but you get to do it in the comfort of your home studio.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. And then you can go out and play your show. You know, like I say, I've got that gig every week. I love that. It's sort of a way to stay fresh. And then, of course, I do other gigs, you know, in between there. But I love having a standing residency somewhere because you get to know the people that come in for that. You get to kind of create this little home away from home.
Right.
And it takes me, you know, 30 minutes to drive there versus when you're touring across the nation, you know, that's then you're on planes, trains, and automobiles, you know. So it's definitely a best of both worlds situation. But I probably will be out on the road a little bit more this year but hopefully I'll be able to kind of maintain that with the other things that I do here and find that balance.
Great.
So, sounds good.
We'll see.
Well, Casey Lansdale, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody go and check out Good Girl. It's going to be, tell us once again where people can see it and listen
to
it.
So the easiest way is just to go to my website, which is caseylansdale.com, and that's got a link to my socials. It's got a link to sign up for the mailing list. It's everything, and that's caseylansdale.com.
There you go.
It's her, for her one-stop shop.
That's right. All of it. Right there.
Casey, it was nice to have you again.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us.
Nice to meet you.
It was
a pleasure.
You too, and all the best to your dad, too.
Thank you.
And everything, and much more success to you. We want to see you continue with that.
I'm going to read those books.
All the best. All right, everybody. Jen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Take care.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, only on LA Talk Radio.